playing Monopoly in there, and no one opens the door because there's liquor everywhere. So he wakes up everyone sleeping in the adjoining room and bursts through, and there's Kenneth Yang with three neckties around his head, doing sake bombs while ironing his pants. We all crack up. And Coach Kaplan is all, "What the fuck, Yang?" Because Kenneth Yang was team captain back then and one of the best policy debaters around. And Kenneth Yang looks at Coach with the three neckties still around his head in his goddamn underpants and says, "It's not what you think. I got a chance card in Monopoly, Coach." Even Phoebe was choking on her soda at this point. "What happened?" I asked. "A week suspension," Toby said, "and he got banned from overnight competition for the rest of the year. Carly Tate took over as captain, and she'd hooked up with the Rancho captain the year before, so that was awkward." "And that, Dragon Army," Austin said, "is why Rancho is the enemy." "And also why the enemy's gate is down," Luke added, earning a few eye rolls for reasons I didn't understand. We ordered an entire chocolate cheesecake for dessert. It arrived at the table, along with half of the Cheesecake Factory staff, who were clapping and singing some permutation of Happy Birthday. The cheesecake went down in front of Cassidy. A single candle poked into the blob of whipped cream in the center. She turned red when she realized what was happening, but took the joke well, blowing out the candle and claiming that she was going to keep it as a souvenir of our immaturity. It turned out everyone's suspiciously oversized duffel bags were full of party supplies, specifically gin and whiskey and wine, the fancy stuff my parents drank, not the cheap beer that went into solo cups at high school parties. There were speakers, too, sleek, expensive ones that plugged into Austin's iPod, and tonic water with lime, and little wedges of gourmet cheese, and a baguette, which I found particularly hilarious as Phoebe pulled it out of her mini suitcase. I didn't know any 16-year-olds who bought baguettes as party supplies. Before I knew it, I was standing in the midst of a party. A bunch of people from some school called Wentworth showed up with a bottle of Prosecco, which Cassidy whispered to me was poor man's champagne. They went to a tiny K-12 school in Los Angeles and gave the impression of being older and jaded, even though some of them were just sophomores. Sam played bartender, rolling up his sleeves and filling plastic champagne flutes and glass cups from the bathroom. He seemed to know what he was doing, rattling off the names of cocktails and bemoaning the fact that we didn't have a bottle of Saint Germain and that Luke had bought the wrong kind of vermouth. The Wentworth team, there were six of them, drifted onto the balcony, smoking and drinking near champagne. Austin set up the speakers and docked his iPod. "Requests?" he called. "Make us feel young and tragic," Cassidy said, sitting cross-legged on one of the beds. She was sipping something that looked like Sprite, but probably wasn't. The opening bars of some Beyoncé disaster drifted through Austin's speakers, and everyone groaned. "I'm joking," he assured us, switching it to Bon Iver. Toby passed me a whiskey on the rocks, and I tasted it cautiously. I wasn't much of a drinker, but there was good music playing and a baguette on the ironing board and Cassidy sitting cross-legged on the duvet in a schoolgirl outfit, so I tossed it back because I was sick of being cautious. Sam refilled it instantly, and I downed the second glass as an afterthought, not realizing what I had done until my head began to spin from the combination of pain medicine and liquor, a combination the little prescription labels had warned against. I sat down next to Cassidy, who was talking with a cute blonde girl from Wentworth.
"But you're here."
The girl frowned, and I got the impression that they were talking about Cassidy's old school.
"Haven't you heard?"
Cassidy smiled tightly.
"I go to Eastwood now."
The girl laughed, skeptical.
"I'm serious," Cassidy insisted. "We have pep rallies and everything. It's adorable." "Yeah, adorable."
The girl glanced at me for a second, her lips twisting into a knowing smile.
"Have you met my baby brother, Cassius?"
Cassidy asked, slinging her arm around my shoulder like we were actually related.
"Hard to believe, he's only 14.
For a second, the girl believed her.
"I thought..."
the girl began, frowning.
"I was kidding,"
Cassidy interrupted coldly.
"God!"
"I'm Ezra," I said, offering a handshake since it seemed to go with the suit.
"Blair,"
the girl said with a toss of her hair.
She glanced up at me through her eyelashes, and I realized that she was the kind of girl who enjoyed competing for a boy's attention.
God, you're charming. Come on, Charming, let's dance.
I couldn't dance, not before, and certainly not then, with two tumblers of whiskey warming my veins and a decided lack of balance. Honestly, I can't, I protested as she pulled me up. And then the lights went off, plunging us into darkness.
Hey, I'm uncorking a bottle of wine here,
Sam complained, his accent even thicker after a few drinks, like a parody of itself.
Shh,
someone said. The door to the adjoining room opened, and Toby stood there holding a candle.
All rise for the team captains,
someone said. Austin cut the music, and everyone stood. The candlelight flickered as Toby and the other team captain, this preppy-looking guy in his grandfather's old Rolex, who had introduced himself as Peter, made their way to the two chairs in the corner. Peter was carrying a gavel. Of course he had a gavel, which he banged against the padded armrest, I suppose for the ceremony of it.
A toast,
he cried, raising his drink.
To the virgins, to make much of time.
Everyone laughed and drank, whether or not the term applied to us personally, although I rather thought it applied to the vast majority, considering we were in a room filled with high school debaters. I could feel Cassidy standing at my side. And when I glanced at her, a bit unsteady on my feet from the liquor, I sensed an unsteadiness inside of her, a different kind. Luke turned the lights back on, leaving them dimmed, and Sam shut the door to the balcony. And thus began the meeting. It was the most bizarre meeting I'd ever been to, like some sort of sarcastic secret society. Toby and Peter took turns choosing different members of their teams to debate each other on ridiculous subjects like whether the President of the United States should be chosen by lottery ticket or if the Pope could defeat a bear in a fistfight. We all voted on who had won each debate, and the loser had to take a shot of gin. Essentially, the whole thing was one elaborate drinking game. To my surprise, I won my debate on whether truth or dare was an effective alternative to a criminal trial. But my victory was short-lived, since they made me drink anyway, because I was new. Cassidy's debate was after mine, and when she flounced to the front of the room to face off against Blair, everyone got quiet. For a moment, I thought Cassidy was going to refuse, or be terrible on purpose, but she didn't do either of those things. Instead, she stood there calmly sipping her drink, while Blair argued that vampires shouldn't have voting rights, and then she straightened her tie, grinning.
My admirable opponent argues that vampires do not deserve suffrage, as many great yet misinformed politicians have done before her, while calling for the continued marginalization of women or other minorities.
Cassidy began.
Yet vampires were at some point human. At what point can a man's voting rights be revoked if he is proven to be of rational mind? And who here would agree to such an egregious breach of liberty? No. The real threat to our electoral system is the werewolf. Can the werewolf cast a vote in wolf form, or only when he appears to be a man? And can we ensure that he is not merely casting the vote of his pack's alpha wolf, rather than his own?
It was both hilarious and intelligent, and it was completely Cassidy. I wouldn't want to follow that, and apparently neither did Blair, because when it was time for her rebuttal, she shook her head and drank from the gin bottle, conceding defeat. Cassidy took a shot as well. She wobbled over to the bed and sat back down next to me, putting her head on my shoulder.
Werewolf suffrage? I asked.
I'm tired,
Cassidy mumbled.
I don't even remember what I was talking about.
Toby and Peter shook hands, calling the debate to an end, and Austin turned the music back up. Someone pulled the blankets off one of the beds and turned the balcony into a fort. Couples ducked in and out for snatches of privacy, and I wondered if Cassidy would suggest we go inside, but she didn't. Austin broke the baguette in half and dueled Toby, sloppy, drunk, and laughing, until Phoebe crawled out of the blanket fort and yelled at them.
Do you have any idea,
she fumed,
how difficult it is to keep a baguette from going stale in a suitcase overnight?
This set everyone into hysterics. I was decently buzzed by that point, the room spinning gently as I sat on one of the beds with Cassidy curled against my shoulder like a cat. We were playing Fruit Assassin on Austin's iPad, trying to sabotage each other with renegade swipes. The music was still on, quieter stuff now.
Hey,
Cassidy said, putting down the iPad.
Hi.
Hi back, I said. Yep, definitely drunk.
I think Blair likes you,
Cassidy said, biting her lip to keep from giggling.
I've talked with her approximately twice ever, so I am an expert in this, and trust me, she is probably even in love with you.
Well, of course she is, I teased. I'm irresistibly charming.
Oh, you are?
Cassidy grinned. Her face was inches from mine. Her braid had come undone, and her hair tumbled over her shoulders, smelling of mint shampoo. And then Toby bellowed,
Fine! You guys can all be beautiful snowflakes! I'm gonna go over here and be an awkward snowflake!
Cassidy glanced at me and started to laugh, while Toby spluttered indignantly at Sam and Austin, not truly angry. And I felt the almostness of our moment drift away, over the railing of the hotel balcony and into the shopping center, where we'd all pretended to celebrate Cassidy's birthday dinner. And maybe it was just as well, after all, since I wanted our first kiss to be more than some drunken thing at a debate tournament. The party ended around 2, everyone making a half-hearted attempt to clean up the evidence before the Wentworth team went back to their own hotel rooms to catch a couple hours' sleep. Cassidy brewed coffee for everyone in the little coffee maker, and we drank it out of plastic champagne flutes.
Okay, time to figure this out,
Toby said, swaggering out of the bathroom in a hotel robe, his hair wet and his contacts swapped for glasses.
Who's bunking with whom?
Phoebe appeared in the doorway to the other room wearing a towel and flip-flops long enough to announce that she and Luke were sharing a bed in there. Sam and Austin looked at each other and shrugged.
I don't mind if you don't snore, Sam said. Yeah, same.
Austin shuffled past Toby and disappeared into the bathroom.
Either of you want a bed to yourself?
Toby asked Cassidy and me. Cassidy glanced at me, but I knew better than to say anything.
We'll just share this one,
she said, patting the duvet.
Captain's privileges, Ellicott. You get your own bed.
And that was how I wound up sharing a bed with Cassidy Thorpe. Before I knew what was happening, Cassidy had changed into a tank top and pajama shorts and crawled under the covers. I came out of the bathroom in my boxers and t-shirt, feeling horribly self-conscious. Austin and Sam were already asleep, scooted toward opposite edges of their bed, both of them snoring. Cassidy put a finger to her lips and nodded at Austin, whose mouth was wide open. I grinned.
Hey, I whispered. I didn't bring pajamas. Do you mind if... or... is it okay?
I was trying to be a gentleman about climbing into bed with her in my boxers since I'd stupidly underpacked, but Cassidy shook her head and peeled back the covers.
Just get in, she said.
I sat down, plugging in my phone on the nightstand, an action that felt incredibly grown up when there was a girl on the other side of the bed. And then I felt Cassidy's hand on my leg.
Does it still hurt?
She asked, sliding her fingers over my knee.
No,
I lied quietly. Cassidy's fingers traced over my scars, and I could tell she didn't believe me.
You don't have to worry,
I said, about kicking me in your sleep or anything.
But I wouldn't want to.
She propped herself on one elbow, staring at me.
You'll have to hold me tight to make sure I don't.
And with that, she rolled over and turned off the light. I crawled under the covers, waiting for my eyes to adjust and having the strange idea that Cassidy could see me just fine in complete blackness. The blinds were drawn, and the room was thick with an expectant sort of darkness filled with sleeping bodies and girls wearing tiny blue pajama shorts. If I stretched, our arms would touch. The possibility of it, of our skin meeting under the covers, thrilled me. I wondered if she was thinking about it, too. And then she sighed.
What?
I whispered.
Shh.
Cassidy whispered back, scooting toward me until her head was on my shoulder.
Don't ruin it.
Even though it was late and I was tired, I must have lain there for an hour, frustrated and hard, and unable to do anything about it, as Cassidy slept with her cheek against my shoulder.
17. I woke up the next morning to the chorus of everyone's coordinated cell phone alarms, feeling like death. My arms were wrapped around Cassidy, and somehow my head was on her shoulder, though I was certain it had been the other way around when we'd fallen asleep. "Hey," I said gently. "Wake up." Cassidy murmured sleepily. Her hair spilled off the pillow in a fierce tangle, and it was so incredibly intimate, waking up with her there, in my arms, that I could hardly stand it. From the next bed, Sam groaned.
"Dude, I thought you were gonna stay on your side," he complained.
"That's so sweet," I called. "Who was the big spoon?"
"Shut up, Faulkner,"
Austin grumbled. Cassidy snuggled against my arm, curling into a ball.
"5 more minutes," she whispered.
"Come on," I said, nudging her. "You have to get up and iron my shirt." That got her. Cassidy's eyes flew open and her mouth twisted into a smirk.
"Good morning to you, too," she said.
I don't know how we managed to get dressed, gather our stuff, and get down to the lobby on time, but we did. I thought Ms. Wang was going to suspect us for sure, the state we were in, but she hardly noticed. There were circles under her eyes, and she kept yawning. The jerks from Rancho had probably kept her up half the night with their beer pong.
"Can we stop somewhere for coffee?"
Toby asked, and Ms. Wang actually agreed. So by the time we arrived at SDAPA, we were all handling the morning a lot better. Ms. Wang drifted off toward the coach's lounge, and we headed toward our table in the cafeteria to drop our stuff and wait for the next round to post. The girls left to apply makeup in the bathroom, and Toby wandered off toward a quiet corner of the cafeteria, motioning for me to follow.
"So,"
he said pointedly, grinning as though he was accusing me of nailing it.
"Are you two together now?"
Reflexively, I glanced toward our table, even though the girls still hadn't returned.
"I don't know," I said truthfully. "Maybe."
"You're certainly acting like it."
He was right. We were acting like it. I'd spent the whole night with a girl cuddled against my shoulder like we'd just had sex, a girl I was in love with and with whom I'd never even kissed, and I had no idea what to do about it.
"Would it bother you if we were?" I asked.
"Well, I'm not going to fly into a jealous rage or anything, if that's what you're worried about."
Toby smirked, but saw that I was serious.
"Honestly, I've sort of known it was going to happen. She's into you."
"You're sure?" I asked.
"No, I want you to make a fool of yourself and actually be rejected for the first time in your life. I'm like the proverbial ostrich that kicks sand in your face, my friend."
Actually, they bury their beaks in the sand," I said.
"Just testing."
The third round posted then, before I could say anything, and everyone crushed toward the far wall to get a look. Toby and I pushed our way to the front, finding our last names and school name printed on the tournament roster. We memorized our room numbers, muttering them under our breaths. We were walking back to the table when Cassidy grabbed my arm. Her expression was serious, and I noticed that she wasn't wearing the Gryffindor tie anymore, just a plain school uniform.
"Hey,"
she said. "Third round is posted." I nodded toward the wall. "I'll wait for you so we can walk together."
"Ezra," Cassidy said, "we have to talk now."
And I knew that whatever it was she needed to say, it wasn't going to be good. I followed her out of the cafeteria and into the courtyard. She stopped by this mosaic wall featuring a perfect day at the beach. It was sort of cruel if you thought about it, putting something like that up in a school. Cassidy looked nervous, which didn't bode well, and she still wasn't saying anything. I was suddenly overcome with a heavy sense of dread.
"You can tell me," I said, "whatever it is."
Cassidy tucked her hair behind her ears. She was wearing it down, in loose waves, and it made her look younger somehow, and more vulnerable.
"You can't go to your third round," she said. "You have to go to mine. I switched us."
Whatever I'd been expecting her to say, this wasn't it. This wasn't even close. I frowned, not really understanding.
"You've been competing as me," she explained. "The judges don't see our names, just like a string of numbers. So I sent you to my rounds yesterday, not yours."
Wait, I said, as the full impact of what Cassidy was saying sunk in. All this time we've been cheating?
No,
Cassidy said fiercely.
I'm done competing, Ezra. I left this, and you brought me back.